Boy bands have been a staple of pop music for generations. They've won over millions of fans and provided gateways to fandom and pop cultural obsession. From New Edition and New Kids on the Block in the 80s to BTS today, with a whole lot of acts like NSYNC and the Backstreet Boys in the middle, there have been countless boy bands to choose from. I'm Stephen Thompson, and today we are offering up a brief modern history of boy bands on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR, so don't go away.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Kind of like Taylor Swift choosing a cardigan on a chilly day. And with their top-rated app, you can deposit checks and transfer money anytime, anywhere, making Capital One an even easier decision. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One N.A. Member FDIC.
Welcome back. Joining us from her home in Brooklyn is Maria Sherman. She is a contributor to NPR Music and the author of the recent book, Larger Than Life, A History of Boy Bands from NKOTB to BTS. Hi, Maria.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Oh, it is such a pleasure to have you. Now, before we get started, this is going to be a brief overview of the last 35 or 40 years of boy bands. There is no way we could possibly get to every O-Town that we can think of. And of course, there have been teen idols for generations prior to what we're talking about today. Now, Maria, in your book, you touch on some male pop groups that laid the groundwork for what we're talking about here, bands like the Jackson 5 and Menudo, and of course, the Beatles. But for the purposes of this conversation, we're going to start in the early 80s. But first, let's define our terms. What makes a band a boy band as opposed to just a band?
You know, you would think there'd be a really concise definition, but I think that they tend to evolve with each musical era and genre. But I do think there are some like superficial truths at play. When you hear band, most people have the idea or it connotes that it's a group of instrumentalists. They can be of any genre, they can be of any age, and their fans can be built of any gender or age. Whereas boy bands immediately have this image of like a certain formula. There's like a rigidity to what the boy band structure looks like. It has to be a group of young men, probably white. They're in their teens or their 20s. If they're in their 30s, they're far too old already and they've moved on to the reunion circuit. If they are instrumentalists, it's not known or they're not performing on stage because then they can't dance. You're limited with your arm movements.
Right.
Hair is a big deal. And they perform primarily for young women, which is kind of the defining boy band feature.
And of course, there are lots of exceptions to that. The fans are always very quick to point out that they are of all ages and genders. And, you know, there are exceptions to every rule. But you're talking about the kind of generalization around what people think of when they think of boy bands.
Of course, yeah. And when I use the term fangirl, which I'm sure I will in many capacities in this conversation as we listen to music, it's always meant with an asterisk. Anybody could be a fangirl. And I like that there seems to be some sort of modern co-option of the term,
yeah.
Taking it as something that used to be criticized or maligned and celebrating it a little bit. In the same way that it's nice to see boy bands like BTS actually own up to the term boy band, which boy bands historically have not been big fans of being labeled that way.
Well, let's get to your first pick. We're going to kind of run chronologically through some of the highlights of the modern boy band era. Why don't you hit us with your first pick?
Yeah, we're going to begin with New Edition's Candy Girl.
Yeah.
And I think New Edition is the first modern boy band. And we can get into that after we listen to this fantastic song.
So that's New Edition's Candy Girl, obviously picking up where the Jackson 5 left off.
So I should go back a little bit and say, I think the boy band story kind of evolves out of secular male vocal group tradition in the book, in a sort of tongue-in-cheek way, but also out of true intellectual curiosity. I really think this begins as soon as you see any sort of boys coming together singing songs that are about love, not God, because those are the two options at the time. And then that eventually leads into doo-wop and barbershop and the Beatles and Menudo and Motown specifically, all those groups that you've mentioned. But when we get the term boy band, which is in the 80s, it's this iteration. It's New Edition. It's their young men and they're learning from the tradition of Motown. I always think the song reminds me so much of the Jackson 5. I've certainly fooled people before with it if they're unfamiliar. but it's the very first modern boy band song, because it is New Edition, who are the first modern boy band, and it's their first original song. Prior to this, they were just performing Motown covers, specifically, again, Jackson 5 covers, around Boston at local talent shows, which is actually where they linked up with their first manager, Murray Starr, who wrote Candy Girl for them and sort of launched their career, and then maybe not took advantage of them. There's a wonderful behind the music that can go into more detail about that, which is also kind of a current throughout the boy band story. They always get involved with somebody who takes advantage of them, and they have to cut ties, and it's so messy, and it happens to every single one of them.
Yeah, there are a lot of unsavory Svengalis here. We'll get to Lou Pearlman and...
Absolutely. And sort of thematically, the song is so heavily girl worship. They're just talking about all these girls that they love, that they think are the absolute best. And I think that is a through line in the boy band story as well. And I think that's why it really attracts that sort of young female audience, the modern Beatlemaniac, because you're hearing this when you're a tween, and a cute boy is telling you that you're the best. That's a very empowering thing. It's a nice sentiment to be expressed to you during puberty. But obviously, again, it's not limited to tween girls. But when I hear Candy Girl, I think bubblegum pop. I think bright colors and adolescence.
Well, let's get to the next big one. This one will be familiar to certainly anyone my age.
This is New Kids on the Block, Step by Step.
Let the record show that I was lip syncing.
And I think I might be blushing. And it's only the 100,000th time I've heard this song in my life. New Kids on the Block. Wow. I think for a lot of people, and when I say a lot of people, I'm thinking of mainstream music listeners. So it's largely going to be a white audience not listening to urban radio where New Edition was played. This is kind of the first big boy band. And New Kids on the Block were also created by Maurice Starr. There is a long history of the sort of impresarios in the boy band story trying to create their own competition and just trying to continue making money off of this incredibly lucrative musical market. But what a great song. This is New Kids on the Block's best-selling record. The way that the song is structured to me is just quintessential boy band. We didn't play it in the little segment, but there's a part where each member sings the steps in which to get a girl or the way that you want a girl. Yeah. And it's each member of the group, which sort of differentiates their voices. So you have an intimate familiarity with who is singing, and then also allows their personalities to shine through. And the same thing goes for the music video. I mean, Donnie Wahlberg's riding a motorcycle without a helmet, the bad boy that he is.
I was going to say, he's the bad boy.
He's 100% the bad boy. Maybe the baddest of the boys. what a delightful song, and so incredibly 80s.
Yeah. When Step by Step came out, I was probably 17 or 18. And so I remember kind of defining myself in opposition to New Kids on the Block, which I think is also can be a rite of passage for people who run into boy bands.
Absolutely. And it becomes foundational in other forms of music. I think the best example of that is the music we'll talk about a little bit later in the late 90s and early 2000s, where I think the popularity of nu metal is very much because that super machismo, Limp Bizkit-esque music came out of boys getting tired of seeing Backstreet Boys and NSYNC on TRL all the time, which I think is pretty funny. I should also say, and this can't be ignored, but boy band music, like all popular music, is founded in black music. So New Kids on the Block sort of having the popularity, at least in the mainstream quote-unquote white space that New Edition wasn't able to access, is very much an element of a racialized industry.
Absolutely.
And the reason Maurice Starr brought these boys together was because most of them grew up in Roxbury or in other black neighborhoods in Boston. They had a familiarity with b-boy music and all of the sounds that he wanted to bring into a mainstream marketplace. And they did so successfully.
Absolutely. Well, let's get to the next pick.
All right. Now we are doing what I consider to be the definitive boy band song. This is Backstreet Boys' I Want It That Way.
When you say that I want it.
Tell me why ain't nothing but a
wants it that way. What does that mean? No one knows. It's wonderful Swedish to English songwriting that I think really defines what I've noticed teens now call the Y2K era, but I guess it just means the late 90s and the early 2000s. This is where boy bands are selling more records than ever before, and also maybe contribute to the demise of the music industry when Millennium, which is the 1999 Backstreet Boys album I Want It That Way is on, costs $23 at Best Buy, and then soon everyone's illegally downloading. Why? I wonder why. But this song, just those like that ascending melody, the fact that Y is pronounced like Y is such a boy, it's such a boy band thing, and I think that also exists in NSYNC with it's gonna be meh instead of me. There's a lot of that weird pseudo robotic futurism thing that boy bands of this era really loved. And it's so of its time, but it's also was so massive and so ubiquitous that it still exists. I hear this song at the grocery store, at wedding receptions, of course, when we could do this karaoke all the time. It becomes one of those songs that's like lived on well longer than I think anybody really expected it to. And of course, sort of behind the scenes, Backstreet Boys were brought together by the impresario Lou Pearlman, who found out about the sort of boy band story after he chartered a jet for New Kids on the Block, saw that these cute boys were making a ridiculous amount of money in merchandising, their faces on lunchboxes and clothing lines at JCPenney and all this sort of stuff, and decides, I'm going to do that too. And he does so well, so incredibly well.
Well, it's interesting. This era is where you start to get an interesting phenomenon in boy bands that I feel like you see more and more in stan culture today, which is enormously popular, theoretically rival bands, where you kind of pick a camp. Are you a Backstreet Boys fan or are you an NSYNC fan? And that kind of leads us to our next pick.
Yeah, and that was totally intentional. And Pearlman created NSYNC to compete with Backstreet Boys, which is why we must listen to NSYNC's Bye Bye Bye. Baby, bye, bye, bye. I had a hit clip, those like keychain 30-second music players of Bye Bye Bye, and I think it might have been that exact segment. So I'm happy we played that exact bit. It really felt like being in middle school or however old I was.
I think we just played a lot of people's former ringtones.
Yes, yeah. That too. So NSYNC, another creation out of Pearlman's head. There's this really sort of now, I consider it to be an infamous quote where he says that where there's Coke, there's Pepsi. Someone was always going to come around and build the competition to Backstreet Boys. So why shouldn't he do the same thing? Sort of famously, Backstreet Boys had no idea this was happening, and NSYNC thought they were going to be sort of mentees to the Backstreet Boys, who certainly weren't having it because they felt betrayed, as they should. And then NSYNC releases No Strings Attached in 2000 and sells so many more records than Backstreet Boys. Yeah. Millennium sold like 1.2 million in the first week. No Strings Attached did that on the first day. I guess most people prefer NSYNC. I happen to be of the Backstreet Boys camp.
This is an NSYNC house.
Oh, no.
There may or may not be at least one bobblehead from that No Strings Attached era in this house.
That. I tend to learn in talking to fans that most people seem to prefer NSYNC, and I think it might be because they're a little bit livelier. Backstreet Boys are certainly moody, and as an emo person myself, the BSB balladry really speaks to me. But Bye 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 is interesting because it's also like it's very much a kiss off message. We've gone from like total girl worship to being like, OK, I'm not going to pine for you anymore. I'm done here. Though I think the popular fan interpretation is that the song is actually about cutting ties with Lou Pearlman after realizing that he was also taking advantage of them. I mean, No Strings Attached, an impresario as a puppet master. The metaphor isn't subtle at all. It's also that like classic Swedish songwriting. It's got Max Martin, who wrote for Backstreet Boys and Britney Spears and all of the teen pop stars of the era, his imprint in that production for sure. I also learned recently that there was originally supposed to be a rap in this song, and I'm so happy they didn't do that.
Oh, man. I can imagine a rap in that song.
Yeah, I like to think that they simply knew better, or just like they're going to cut it on radio, so might as well never include the rap here. But what a classic song. And I liked that when it was playing, we were both doing the sort of single hand clap dance. You know, I don't know if Backstreet Boys have a definitive dance move in the same sort of way. And I think it's, I don't know, it's like the single ladies of 2000 or something. It's the Thriller of the year 2000.
Well, going from a group that had a dance to a group that did not know how to dance, let's go to our next pick.
This is One Direction's best song ever, and it was the best song ever. And we danced all night. It's so hard for me not to listen to the entirety of that song as a very obvious and frank directioner. It's like the first sentence of my book. But One Direction, wow, talk about a group that truly saw the boy band stereotypes and just decided we don't want any of that. Unlike all of the groups you've mentioned already, their music is steeped heavily in pop rock. The intro to this song is the riff from The Who's Baba O'Reilly, and that caused a lot of drama in the Who fandom. I don't know. But then Pete Townsend was like, no, One Direction is great, and now One Direction fans love The Who. But essentially, I think a lot of it is also because they're British, and prior to this, American audiences in particular didn't really jive with British boy bands. There wasn't one that totally broke in the way that American boy bands did. And as you said, they certainly didn't dance. They just kind of jumped around like cheerful, delightfully delinquent British teenagers that they were. And they also formed on a television show, which is new of the time. We have stuff like O-Town, who we skipped over, who were made on Making the Band, but that was kind of their entire progression. One Direction goes on a reality show. They don't know each other. We get to watch them form, and that element of total accessibility becomes a defining feature in the sort of now super modern, I guess, boy band story. We like to be there from day one and watch them kind of grow up. Oh God, this song, I'm like out of breath. I love it so much. It's so funny that like it took until whatever year this was, 2013, for a boy band to release a song called Best Song Ever, because it really does feel that way to me. It's so ridiculously cheerful.
Well, here's where I recommend that everybody listening to this go to NPR Music and read an excerpt from Maria Sherman's book. It's called One Direction's Big Bang. You can read it at NPR Music, and it is phenomenal. And your enthusiasm shines through.
Well, I'm so glad. And I also hope that people learn something from it. That was kind of important to me in writing this book, to give the boy band story, which hasn't been given this sort of level of critical consideration. I mean, there hasn't been a history of boy bands written before, that intellectual curiosity, that analysis, but also to make people laugh and have fun with it. Because what is this music other than total unbridled enthusiasm and just jovial hit after hit?
Well, you just mentioned enthusiasm and hit after hit. That is a perfect segue into your last song pick.
This is BTS with Dynamite. What a banger!
That song is so fun.
It's so fun. I had to look it up because I forgot when it came out, but it came out in August of 2020. Mm-hmm. I hear Dynamite almost daily in commercials and in my house just because I need to hear it. But I selected Dynamite because it's the K-pop boy band BTS, Bangtang Boys, their first English language recording after having already been a band for 7 years. And that, to me, is so fascinating, because prior to this era, if you were a group recording in a non-English language, you would probably re-record the song in English to appease the American music market, the largest music market in the world. And BTS never had to do that. They found a really, like, a ginormous, I wish I could tell you how many members of their army there were, fan base who didn't require the, like, English language songwriting to fall for them. And that just shows how, like, the boy band story can evolve to become this sort of global appreciation. And it also, I think, I hear echoes of like Uptown Funk in here, maybe.
Totally.
Like Lizzo's Juice. Mm-hmm. They have like contemporary touchstones that are particularly like this retro exuberance. And it also is a little bit different than their other material. They can get like very trap heavy. They're kind of all over the place, which is to this sort of like eclecticism that I don't think was available to boy bands before K-pop kind of took over our hearts. And I also think it's just sort of brilliant marketing. Jungkook, the maknae, which is the cute one of the boy band tropes, the youngest one, he sings, not the heartthrob, the cute one. There's a difference. It's just the age. He sings the majority of the song. He does like the lead verse. He's the one who sings about drinking milk and rock and rolling. And it's really brilliant because in America, historically, we've always had an affinity for the cute one. In the One Direction age, there were a huge number of Niall Horan fans. Obviously, we know Harry Styles for his solo career, but we've always loved Niall Horan. In Backstreet Boys, we love Nick Carter. We love the blonde baby of the bunch. Mm-hmm. And though he's not blonde, Jungkook spiritually is the blonde baby of BTS. It's just such a wholesome, wonderful song. I mean, they talk about drinking milk. It doesn't get more charming.
Playing ping pong.
Yeah, it's just so, so sweet. Oh, God. I'm crying a little bit. This is fine. It's also thematically a removal from that sort of girl worship songwriting place where now it's just a happiness that kind of comes from inside. It's like a self-love thing is big in BTS. Of course, their Love Yourself era albums. Yeah. And I think that also opens it up to a new exploration of what the like fangirl idea, that like sort of Beatlemaniac that I've mentioned, looks like. If it's no longer sort of based in some sort of loving relationship outside of yourself with like in a heterosexual way, but like a self-love, then that appeals to everybody. And it's beautiful and I love them.
Well, you are not wrong. And this is where I recommend, of course, if you haven't already, check out BTS's Tiny Desk Home Concert from NPR Music, which was such a joy to put together. Well, we want to know what your must-hear boy band songs are. I'm guessing many of you have at least one. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you want more song recommendations, make sure to check out some of the excellent podcasts from NPR Music, shows like Alt Latino and All Songs Considered. That brings us to the end of our show. Maria, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you so much. I hope everybody dives deep into the boy band story after listening to us giggle for half an hour.
Thank you. We will see you all right back here next time.
There's no denying that there is a lot going on in the economy right now.
So far in 2021, about 3,600 retail stores have closed.
You know, China has banned Bitcoin many times before, but this time it's looking pretty serious.
Understanding this stuff, it is kind of our thing here at The Indicator. It's how we like to spend our free time. Every day we explain something that is going on in the economy. Listen and follow The Indicator from Planet Money on NPR.